If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Finn Martin. Hey Finn, how are you on this fine Tuesday?
Yeah, feeling better. Feeling better. The voice, it's feeling clearer, coughing less. Still haven't shaken it. I mean, it must be my age. You know, it's taken me a while to clear this cough. This is what happens when you get in your 50s. I mean, you'll know about that soon enough, Kenny.
See, I don't know why you had to come for me. You didn't have to come for me there. Straight away. 1 minute of the podcast, I'm a lovely young early 30s man. That's all I am.
Well, closer to 40 than 30, though, aren't you?
That's like a bullet. That's like shooting me with a bullet. But anyway, luckily, by the time I'm 50, you will be approaching your 70s. So we'll have jabs to throw at each other at that point. But I'm glad to hear you're doing better. Lots of wrestling going on, but before we do talk about wrestling, we do obviously want to talk about free beer, because we have been talking about Beer 52, our partners. Lots of people have been taking up the offer for some free beers. We've got an offer with them where you can get 8 craft beers for free from the best breweries in the planet. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/ITR, and you can get it. All you need to do is pay £5.95 for the postage. You've heard me talk about all in the last couple of weeks. They're the most popular craft beer discovery world club in the world. They've got over 150,000 members, and each month's case has got a different theme, from New Zealand, America, Korea, and all the other places. But like me, dark beer is not your thing. You can get the light option, and your case will come with the beer magazine Ferment. You got a snack as well, but you can pause or cancel your account anytime once you've signed up. You just need to go to www.beer52.com/ITR to get your first 8 beers for just £5.95. We talked to this before. You don't do bitter anymore. You're a lager man.
Exactly, but my postponed all dayer, as it's taking place this Saturday, and two of the guys I'll be out with this Saturday, they will be signing up for this.
Yeah, there you go. And if you're in the UK, you can sign up as well and check it out. There's lots going on in wrestling, though, this week, Finn. And I guess we should kick it off with ratings, because there was some really good news for SmackDown this past Friday and also for AEW last Wednesday. Good numbers for both companies. They should be happy about.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think NXT did okay as well, didn't they? Did they do about 850 on Tuesday? So, SmackDown did 2.329 million viewers for Friday. That's Friday, September 11th episode. That's its highest number in over 5 months. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive, really. And obviously, AEW cracked the 1 million mark for the first time in quite some time.
Yeah, first time in 2020. So, I guess it shows you that, coming out of a pay-per-view, people want to see what AEW are going to do. And on SmackDown, it shows you the Sasha Bailey and the Roman Reigns stuff is really working.
Absolutely. It's the stories. It's the characters. We know this. You know, I mean, give Vince Russo his due. It's not the matches. It's the stories and the characters. You know, I'm being absolutely serious there. It is stories and it's characters that drive it. On that score, Vince Russo and I are in full agreement. Maybe about the only thing that we are in agreement on when it comes to pro wrestling.
Yeah, I think so. I would love the car crash element of you and Vince Russo doing like one podcast together and just seeing how long it takes for you to go, Vince, you're off your fucking rocker. I would give it about 10 minutes, but you know, the thing is, you would never put yourself up for that. You would never want to have to do it, which I understand.
Listen, the first time I just said to him, don't you call me bro. Otherwise, I'm going to cut this thing off.
So the call would last 32 seconds.
Exactly.
Also, we should mention that Finn Balor was, he became the new NXT champion last Tuesday, beating Adam Cole in their match. What did you make of the match? I thought it was miles better than the Iron Man match the previous week. And I think Balor was probably the right call to be champion. What did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was tremendous. I was amused that I'd said when in last week's recording, in reference to the Sammy Guevara and Matt Hardy DDT on the concrete. And I mentioned this, something about how this has as much effect as a hammerlock. And they actually did a hammerlock spot in the Cole and Finn Balor match. And Cole was working the hammerlock on Balor, and Balor actually sold the hammerlock more than Sammy sold the DDT on the concrete. So that did amuse me. That was surely a coincidence. I thought it was a tremendous match. You know, just these two guys, top of the line pros. I mean, you know, it's so competently put together, so proficient. Nothing was rushed. They had plenty of time, but they didn't do too much either. You know, they had the discipline to put together a really tightly wound match that peaked at the finish. Balor won with the 1916 from the top rope to capture the vacant NXT title. And I thought it was interesting later when they were backstage that Cole came up to Balor and shook his hand and congratulated him on the victory. And it really liked the way that they handled that. It was sort of backstage and very subtle. And if you weren't really paying attention, you might have missed it the first time. So I really enjoyed that. That just kind of looked spontaneous, as though this wasn't something that was scripted. First class, one of the best NXT matches of the year in terms of just a straight one-on-one match rather than like a gimmick match. I thought it was one of the best things NXT's done this year. You enjoyed it as well, right, Kenny?
Yeah, no, I did. And I think part of what I really enjoyed about it was I find a lot of times when I watch Adam Cole matches that I get exhausted because there's so much stuff that happens and it goes on for so long. And I just find myself kind of going, you know, it's so much. But this match was perfect in terms of length. And I think it just showed me that, for me, an Adam Cole match works when it's about the 20-minute mark. Yeah. I felt that way with Pat McAfee. I felt that way with Finn Balor. I just think that when you get over that, it should be the exception rather than the rule. And I think that in the last kind of year or so, it's been the rule rather than the exception. So I'm hoping that we're on a 180 in that regard, and that we're going to start seeing more kind of tight matches. And that's the way it's going to go. So yeah, but I thought the match was great, and I'm intrigued to see what Balor's going to do as champion.
It was just great to see him working the holds and just doing like almost like old style wrestling at the start, rather than immediately going into the big moves and just doing too much. It was, you know, perfectly paced, perfectly measured. I thought it was outstanding. I thought it was outstanding matchup.
We should mention just a couple of kind of news items before we move on to talking about SmackDown Raw, where there was lots happening. I can't quite believe it, but Jeff Hardy has re-signed with WWE. And he will be, and one of the, he did an interview with BT Sport where he said one of the kind of caveats to re-signing, he said, is that when the crowds are back, he gets to bring back his No More Words theme that he used to use back in like 2009. I've got to say, I am surprised that he has come back. He has signed this quickly, but I mean, you know, I assume at this point it's like he's been offered a deal where it's very low risk to him. He doesn't have to work too much, and that must have been the decision, because I can't imagine that he is signing due to creative fulfillment after the Sheamus feud.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, I know neither you nor I enjoyed that feud, and it's hard to believe many people did. But I mean, maybe he was all right with it. It's hard for me to believe, looking back, that Jeff would have agreed to that at this point in his life if he didn't feel like there was a message in there, which obviously there was. And in the end, it was Sheamus who lost and received his comeuppance, and he was put in his place. And as a result of the victory in that feud, Jeff then went on to win the Intercontinental title from AJ Styles. And he's now in one of the best feuds on SmackDown at the moment. I'm really looking forward to that, presumably a triple threat match, Clash of Champions. I know it hasn't been announced yet, but presumably it'll be Jeff Hardy versus Styles versus Sami Zayn to clear up the Intercontinental title. Well, there is only really confusion in Sami Zayn's mind You know, there isn't any confusion in anyone else's mind. But just to determine a undisputed intercontinental champion, presumably, that was will be the stipulation conditions of the match. So, I mean, to me, maybe he wasn't that bothered about it. Maybe he was like, well, you know what? I'm going to go along with this because they want to do it. And I do feel bad about what's happened previously. And almost by doing this, it's almost like a message to me to keep me on the straight and narrow. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, he can't have objected to it that strongly. Otherwise, would he have re-signed? I mean, we talked at length last week about Matt Hardy and the way his career's gone since he joined AEW. I don't think we need to go over that ground again because it would just be pedantic and I just really don't. I mean, in case of repetition, to go over all that again. So I think, you know, Jeff's probably looking at that and presumably had no real sort of qualms. But, you know, he went along with the Sheamus feud, knowing what was at the end of it, which was him winning and then him going on to bigger and better things. So here we are. You know, he's now IC champ. I mean, I can imagine Jeff potentially facing Universal Champion Roman Reigns at some point. I think that is a feud that we could see in the future. And it's a feud that most people, I think, would be up for. And it's a believable series of matches. So maybe that's part of the deal as well. Again, you know, you do something for the team. You take one for the team, the Sheamus feud, and you're rewarded. And with the Intercontinental title, this, you know, what has the potential to be an outstanding series with Sami Zayn and Styles. I think that can be a tremendous series of matches. And then potentially after that, you could be looking at a 2 or 3 month program with Roman Reigns. I think a lot of people would be up for that. I don't think that's a stretch at all to book Jeff Hardy against Roman Reigns. And I think him as a babyface against Reigns, especially as Reigns becomes more firmly established as a heel, I think that can be a boon for both men. I think both Reigns and Hardy can get so much from that series. So I do understand why he's re-signed. You know, when you actually lay it all out, it's a safe option for him, really, when you think about it. And besides, if he goes to AEW, what does he do? Does he form a team with his brother? You know, his brother's, fortunately, his career's, we don't need to go over what's happened with Matt. Again, we talked about that length last week. But I mean, that would then be tricky. And who would he wrestle there? And to me, if you look at where he's at on SmackDown right now, there seems to be a very clear pathway for him. And really, unless WWE completely screws it up, most of it sounds really good to me. It sounds very promising, very encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you're in your mid-40s, the, you know, safety is a good thing. You know, you look at Rey Mysterio as well. Rey Mysterio, obviously, a lot of, I mean, he was ready to sign just based off Dominic alone. Because I remember 2 years ago when he was over in the UK for like indie shows and stuff, and there was the chat about, you know, he would maybe go back to WWE for Dominic. That was the reason he was going to go back. And I mean, Dominic is now one of the, you know, the best baby faces on Raw. So it was definitely the right decision. But I think with Jeff, I think that if he went to AEW, it'd be a risk. And he mentioned I want to take that risk. So good for him. And I'm sure landing a big money contract.
Yeah, I mean, also, if you look at Rey Mysterio as well on SmackDown last week, I was thinking, why is Angie there? Why is Rey's daughter there? And we were given a hint was dropped on Friday, wasn't it? After the cage match between, on Raw. After the cage match between Dominic and Seth Rollins, and Aliyah was there and she sort of put a hand on Murphy as if to comfort him after he was beaten up by Seth Rollins. So I've often thought, well, why is she there? And now we know, it seems to me that she's going to become part of the story and become a recurring character as well. So I'm sure that played into his decision to re-sign for WWE, potentially receiving reassurances that, yes, we will feature your son and your daughter, you know, in money positions or in positions that are going to have some meaning and value in the storylines for the foreseeable future. So you can absolutely understand that. Whereas you go over to AEW, you kind of got to start again and you'd have to do a different style. And with all the high flying in AEW, I guess, to be honest, if Ray had gone there, he would have been all right because he would have done a different style. I don't think there's no way he would have tried to keep up with all the aerial moves that people do in AEW. So he would have done something else and probably would have succeeded. But you can understand why he's re-signed with WWE because A, he's established there, and B, his offspring, one of them's now doing very well for himself, and the other one potentially could do very well for herself. So you can understand why he would do that, because it secures your position and it secures family members' positions as well.
I also wanted to ask you, just it's a two-part question. Obviously, the NWA is not able to do a lot right now because of what's going on, but they've partnered up with United Wrestling Network and Fight TV, and now they're going to be doing this kind of partnership where they're doing weekly pay-per-views, where it's like, you know, I think it's like $7.99 for one, and then you can buy the month for like $23 or something. And obviously back in 2002, 18 years ago, NWA TNA did the weekly pay-per-view thing. What do you remember about the weekly pay-per-view thing coming around 2002 with NWA TNA? You know, did you think it was going to work? And is this a good idea for NWA to partner up and do this in 2020?
I mean, in 2020, you've got to try. You have to, you can't, it's almost impossible to sell tickets right now. I mean, I know some promotions are running shows with fans in attendance, but it's a greatly reduced amount of people than you can, although the new prior to COVID could let in. So you can only let in like, was it 15, 20% capacity of each venue. So you've got to find other ways of trying to make money out of wrestling, because I mean, here we are mid-September. We don't know how long it's going to be. I mean, if you think back in March, April, we were talking about, oh, yeah, they'll probably allow fans in again in the autumn. I mean, there's no guarantee that any fans, or at least large, you know, a venue like WWE is obviously sticking with the Thunderdome for now. It doesn't seem to me like WWE has got any plans to allow fans to do ticketed events for anytime soon. I mean, are you aware of any events that they're selling tickets to at the moment, Kenny? Have you started selling tickets to events?
The only thing I've seen is that WrestleVotes had said that they'd asked about the Royal Rumble, and the plan is to have the Royal Rumble in front of fans somehow and to try and start selling tickets to events. But I, from what I'm reading between the lines, they're thinking like January 1st. You know, okay. They're not thinking, you know, so, I mean, at this point, yeah, they've not announced yet the Survivor Series is just going to be in the Thunderdome, but because at the moment WWE are up to, because I mean, this is interesting. They have actually moved the pay-per-view, the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view, I think it was, back and put it at the end of October around the beginning of November, so that it still is within the Thunderdome contract, which goes up to the end of October. So even at the very least, the beginning of November is the earliest they could do it, but they have not announced any plans to do so.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably going to be pushing it, and it wouldn't surprise me if they did wait until January before they started doing ticketed events. So in the interim, for these smaller companies that don't have the revenue streams that WWE has, they've got to try something, and they're appealing to their fans' generosity. I mean, this is when you find out, you know, how much your fans care about your promotion or your product or whatever it is you're doing. Will they financially support it? And that's the true test in 2020, isn't it? So I think the NWA has to do something like this. Otherwise, it will just shrivel into insignificance. You know, it will just fade away. So I do understand why they're doing it. Obviously, can't sell tickets, so they've got to do something else. And that's making it available for people to purchase on pay-per-view. So yeah, I understand why they're doing it, and they're going to find out how loyal their audience is when they start offering these events for sale. But as far as the question of NWA TNA back in 2002, when they came up with this weekly pay-per-view concept, I remember at the time Vince McMahon was asked about it. I think it was just before it launched, and I can't remember who it was with. He did an interview with a mainstream newspaper or TV station or whatever it was. And I remember Vince saying that he just didn't understand it. He didn't understand how it could work. And obviously for TNA, it never did. It might do in 2020. Again, it all depends on, does your audience want to support your venture? Does your audience want the talent to continue to be able to do this for a living? Do they want this business to, or the promotion or organization or whatever it is, a company, do they want it to exist? So it's really, you know, the onus is on the public to support these things. And NWA is going to find out how loyal its audience is when this is launched.
I will give them this. If Indies had a chance, the new 10 pounds of gold episode with you know, kind of promoting the Nick Aldis Mike Bennett match has been really well put together. And I think when you watch it, you can remember why NWA was so popular with people, or why it gained such a kind of niche following, because it's that old school sports type feel. So I really hope for them that the Bennett and Aldis match sells for them. I really do, and I hope that because the NWA, while it's not going to, you know, it's a shame, because you know, if COVID hadn't happened, the NWA would have probably done a UK tour, and they'd have probably done okay. They'd have probably brought in a couple of imports and probably used a few British guys, and that would have generated some income for them. And you know, they'd have probably done a couple of pay-per-views by now, but everything's been halted, so they're in a difficult spot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the break-even will be on a venture such as this. Obviously, there's costs associated with running this. They've got to try it, haven't they? They just have to. They can't just sit around waiting for the world to return to normal, because, yeah, okay, it could be 4 months, but it could be longer than that.
It's, yeah, I feel for them. But do you know what? I hope the best for them, because I really do enjoy the product. I also think that it wouldn't be a bad idea. We saw Thunder Rosa, you know, going into AEW. It wouldn't be a bad idea for Nick Aldis to do it as well. You know, keep the NWA title out there.
I totally agree. I mean, they need to strike a deal there. And, you know, that's a large audience. 1 million people, more than 1 million people watched it last week. I mean, to me, why can they not put some sort of deal together to get him on TV occasionally, at least, to spread the good word about the NWA.
And then the last thing before we move on to TV is, we found out last Wednesday that the former Rusev Miro has signed with AEW. Where do you kind of sit with him on, you know, the people that AEW should sign? Do you think he's got a big upside? What's the markability and the sellability of Miro at this point?
I mean, we've been fans of him for years. I mean, we looked on in bewilderment and frustration when he was really over, and the Rusev Day t-shirts were selling, you know, fans were chanting it. And he was like somebody who'd seemed to be on the verge of really becoming the next, maybe not main eventer, but certainly upper mid-card player. And Vince, WWE, just didn't go with it. I mean, they blocked it. I mean, it was like, instead of facilitating his growth, they impeded it. And it was just very, very disappointing to witness, wasn't it, Kenny? I mean, we talked about this many times, didn't we, when it was occurring?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, because the thing is, you know, we cover WWE a lot, and there are a lot of good things that they do, but they have dropped the ball with a lot of people, and he's one of the key people that they really, you know, he was such a talent, and he got himself over with the Rusev Day thing, and they just never went with it, and that's a sin. And I think that, you know, I know Chris Jericho had said on one of his podcast things that, like, he thinks WWE will regret sort of letting him go, and I think that they will if he can be in something that, you know, just clicks, then he's going to do really well.
I agree. I mean, it awakened memories of the whole Zack Ryder thing, didn't it? Where he got himself over, and then WWE kind of reluctantly had to push him because they were taking so much flack from their audience for not pushing this guy that fans had decided was a star. And the Rusev Day thing was almost like it was not a organization created star. It was a fan created star. And sometimes WWE goes with that, and sometimes WWE blocks that. And I know Miro did a few interviews, and he was talking about his conversations that he had with Vince. And Vince was just saying, well, you know, he never recognized it. You know, Vince was telling Miro, thought Rusev, that no, you're not really a star. You know, these people are just ribbing you. It's not real. It's artificial. It's not genuine. You know, it's just this sort of like fab thing that fans have created to amuse themselves. You know, almost like the, you know, the Fandango thing where he was really over, wasn't he? For like, was it about 3 weeks after?
Yeah, he got an iTunes top 40 hit in the UK.
But it was so fleeting, wasn't it? It was just unbelievable how quickly that was over when it was after, which WrestleMania was that? Was that WrestleMania 13?
Yeah, WrestleMania 29.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, he was really over like on Raw the next night, and then, but like by like week three, it had just faded, and it was clearly like a short-lived fad. And obviously he's doing well for himself now with Tyler Breeze, they're NXT tag team champs, you know, and I'm really pleased for Fandango and Tyler Breeze that they are tag champs. They can still go, they've still really got it. And they appear to be, you know, having a good time there and feel like the talents have been recognized by NXT. And they never were going to be by WWE, but, you know, good for them that they're doing so well in, you know, okay, it's the C brand, it's the third brand, but so what? You know, it matters and they matter on that brand. So, as far as, you know, Miro goes in AEW, I mean, it's really hard to know if he's going to really explode there and become the star that we thought that he was going to be in WWE and probably would have been had WWE facilitated that. I would rather not pass judgment at this point because he's only been there for 1 week. And I'd rather not make a snide comment about AEW, even though I am tempted, you know, with their track record with big guys. It's been hit and miss, as we know. But I mean, I'm hopeful for him. I mean, the thing about Miro is he can do it all, can't he? He can be like a tough guy. He can be a monster. He can do the comedy. You know, he's obviously really sharp. You can tell that he loves wrestling and he wants to be better. He wants to be better tomorrow than he is today. And he absolutely wants to be a somebody in this business or somebody that's bigger than he is now. And that must be very frustrating if you're a WWE wrestler in that system. And you've done everything that they told you to do. You've got yourself in tremendous shape. You've made the best out of everything they've given you. And managed to turn like a completely failing storyline or character into a minor or even like moderate hit. And then, you know, you're basically chewed up and spat out. And that must be very hard to maintain your enthusiasm when you feel like the system is not recognizing and rewarding you for your hard work in AEW right now. I want to believe that AEW is going to get it right with him because I think he can be a major player there. He could be AEW champ. I mean, he could be, couldn't he? Absolutely. There's no reason why he couldn't be wrestling John Moxley in 6 months' time or whomever's Kenny Omega or whomever's champion then. There is no reason why he couldn't be at that level and hold that belt. I mean, there's no reason in my mind why you can't go all the way there, but we will have to wait and see, Kenny.
Yeah, and hopefully he is presented as a babyface big guy because they've got enough heel big guys, you know, with Brody Lee and Lance Archer. Like, Miro's different, so, you know, let him be different. And, you know, he's very cheeky, and I think that's a selling point. You know, and
he's got a real likability factor to him, hasn't he?
Yeah, you could picture yourself doing a Jaeger bomb with him. Which is the test.
Oh, my God.
I couldn't. I love that you've still got PTSD from that, like, a year ago. Anyway, let's move on to SmackDown Raw, see what's been happening on WWE TV. So on SmackDown, obviously one of the big stories was Roman Reigns. He comes out at the beginning of the show with Paul Heyman, and then Jey Uso comes out, and, you know, Jey Uso wants to kind of still be pals and all that, and he thanks Heyman for getting him into the four-way last week, and Heyman saying, you know, it was Reigns' idea. And then that brings up King Corbin and Sheamus, and they end up in a fight, which leads us to the main event, which is Jey Uso and Roman Reigns against Sheamus and King Corbin. And kind of similar to form, it's Jey Uso doing most of the work, and then at the end, as he goes up for his top rope splash, Roman tags himself in, and he just comes in, spears Sheamus, and wins. And then post-match, we have Reigns, you know, presented the belt by Heyman. Jey and Reigns sort of raise hands together, but the tension is there. Jey is now realizing that, you know, this is not the same cousin that he's used to. And I thought they played a blinder kind of through this show, because I was worried at the beginning that they were going to play Jey Uso like an idiot babyface who didn't understand that Roman Reigns is probably going to screw him. But by the end, Jey Uso got it, and they did it in a kind of slow way, but it was like, it was believable that Jey Uso thought, we're family, you know, we're still the same. But then at the end, when Roman kind of came in and hogged all the spotlight and took the glory, Jey kind of sussed where this is going. So I thought they played it really well on this. How did the story work for you with Jey and Roman on SmackDown?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I mean, you know, Reigns and Paul Heyman on the show. You know, Reigns was saying that it wasn't going to be Uso's night at Clash of Champions. Reigns said that it would be just like when they were kids, that Reigns used to beat Jey up, and then Jey came out and said they weren't kids anymore. So that was threatening to turn unpleasant. But then King Corbin came out to complain about the nepotism shown towards Jey by Reigns last week, that is getting him a spot in the match after Big E was wiped out by Sheamus. And then Jey challenged, also Sheamus came out as well to join in with the burial of Jey. And then Jey ended up challenging Corbin and Sheamus to a tag team match. So Corbin and Sheamus versus Jey and Reigns. And that was on. So it was very subtle. I mean, one thing I really enjoyed backstage was a little spot of them backstage, Jey Uso talking to Roman Reigns, who was sat on a settee, and Jey was doing all the talking. He was there rabbiting on, and Reigns was kind of, you know, looking into outer space as if he wasn't really interested in listening to what his cousin had to say, and he was kind of finding him a bit annoying. So that was a nice touch as well. And then we got to the main event, and Jey had to go it alone. And he was doing really well. And then finally Roman Reigns showed up, tagged himself in, hit the spear on Sheamus, scored the 1-2-3. So he took all the glory while Jey did all the work. And then afterwards Reigns walked up the ramp towards the stage. As you said, Paul Heyman gave him the Universal title belt, and then Jey joined him and put his hand on the title belt, and then Reigns kind of withdrew the belt from Jey's grasp, snatched it away, and it was like there's a little bit of tension there, as you said, and you know, it's a slow burn. They're not rushing this at all, and I think Jey's looking at this right now, and you would think, well, what's he supposed to think? What's the character supposed to think? You know, he's this Reigns guy, you know, this guy he's known since he was a little kid. He's changed, but how much has he changed? And he's not like a full overt heel at this point, is it? It's more very sort of subtle the way he's playing it. It's not over the top at all. And I think they'll make us wait until Clash of the Champions before we really see that mean side of Roman Reigns. And no doubt he'll use a shortcut defeat to defeat Jey Uso. And it will only be at that point that Jey will really, his eyes will truly be open, and he will see Roman Reigns for who he now is. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I think it's just, this is the exact kind of story that B pay-per-views were created for. You know, this is, you would never do this in a SummerSlam or a WrestleMania, but these are the pay-per-views where you do this kind of stuff. And a lot of times in these pay-per-views, we see kind of just random thrown stuff together that kind of isn't very enticing. But this is a really good story that's kind of seeped in real life. I mean, I think one thing worth bearing in mind, because I know that you said SmackDown did really well last week, I think that a lot of people who maybe don't watch WWE anymore have not come back for this because they see this as a little bit kind of too little too late with Roman. And I do understand that, because I think that is fair. They should have done this turn 5 years ago, but they because it's funny, in some ways Roman's coronation is this.
Yes,
this is his coronation. You know, I give credit to Sean Ross Sapp for saying that last night, so I don't want to take full credit for it, but you know, they've been trying to coronate him for 5 years. This is the coronation. Him as champion now as a heel with Heyman, this is the coronation. This is ultimately what's going to make Roman have the sort of longevity that they've not been able to get with him before. So I hope that in time people do come back to it, because they show that there's a real story here they're telling. It's long term, and it's not, you know, it's something that matters and rewards you for keeping watching.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing about it is, I think you've got to give them time here. It's a new character, and building it slowly is what is required. And, you know, what interests me is we've got this Jey Uso thing. It's a B pay-per-view storyline. I think Jey will get something out of this, even though he's obviously not going to win. I think he will be enhanced in some way. I know Reigns will be. But you look at Reigns' potential opponents. You've got Jeff Hardy. I think that there, that could even headline Raw Rumble. It's not a WrestleMania match, but that's a big pay-per-view match. Big E, they're probably going to give him a match with Roman Reigns at some point when he returns. We've got Otis, who's Money in the Bank champion, don't forget. So presumably he's going to, once he's finished clowning around with Morrison and Miz, he'll presumably cash in on Reigns at some point. So I think that's a match that can do a lot for Reigns. I don't know whether it can really do that much for Otis, but it's probably not going to do him any harm. We've got Bray Wyatt, The Fiend. That's there. Simmering, it's on one on the cooker at the moment, Kenny. Not on three or five, on one.
You know, one on the hob.
It's going to be there for a while. So, I mean, they know they've got to keep it on one, because otherwise it's going to burn the bottom. It's going to burn the bottom of the pan, and we don't want that. So, I mean, that's three, four opponents there. So, I mean, there's like four opponents there without even really thinking about it. So you've got a lot that you can do with this Roman Reigns character. And there's a lot of opponents there that can work with him. And they're all very different feuds as well, that I think can work very well for the babyface characters. And I think more importantly for the Reigns character, because he's obviously the priority right now, is making him into, well, obviously he's the star of the SmackDown brand, but it's just building him into a bigger draw than he is right now, with this new character, this new title reign, and this new special counsel, Paul Heyman.
Who you know, Paul Heyman was on this show once, but in some ways he was on it twice, because the Firefly Funhouse had promised us a new character, and after the Vince McMahon puppet came up and told Bray Wyatt that he was, basically needed to, he promised this parrot, the parrot didn't get delivered, he's losing his trust. And he was about to fire him, and then all of a sudden he said, no, I'm willing to work with you. What do you have in mind? And Vince introduced Wobbly Walrus as the special advisor to the Firefly Funhouse. The Walrus was meant to look like Paul Heyman, but in some ways looked a bit like Danny DeVito playing the Penguin from Batman Returns back in 1992. And Vince said that this is some good shit. Wyatt says, oh no, in a Home Alone style pose, and it's a to-be-continued graphic. This was so great.
Oh, it was. So it wasn't Alexa Bliss, although we should just mention before we do the Firefly Funhouse thing, is that there was a Fatal 4-Way match earlier on the show to name Bayley's opponent at Clash of Champions. It was Nikki Cross versus Alexa Bliss versus Tamina versus Lacey Evans. I mean, what a bit of a motley crew, isn't it? So Alexa ended up nailing Nikki with Sister Abigail and then walking off trance-like. So thinking, is she going to be the one that turns up in the Firefly Funhouse? She wasn't. And then Nikki went on to win the match, amazingly. So the match did fall apart slightly towards the end. But anyway, yeah, Nikki ended up winning. So, I mean, she's there and she'll be facing Bayley at Clash of the Champions. But yeah, getting back to the Firefly Funhouse. Yeah, I mean, it was really funny, wasn't it? It's like, was the name of the parrot was Pasquale, the persevering parrot, wasn't it?
Yes, which is a bit of a tongue twister.
Yes, and that was supposed to be the new character that was inside a box. So Bray opened the box and said, oh dear, I should have put some holes in the box. But I think maybe we were meant to believe that Mercy the Buzzard had eaten the parrot. I mean, this is the Firefly Funhouse, so it doesn't really matter, does it? And then the Vince doll turned up and said to Bray, you've lost the Universal Championship. You've lost the persevering parrot. And worst of all, you've lost my trust. You clearly can't handle the responsibility of the Firefly Funhouse on your own. And then we had a reference to, you know, this is non-negotiable and you had better fully cooperate, which felt to me like it might be a reference to the third party business that we talked about last week.
It did feel like that. Because, I mean, when I was watching this promo as well, you were thinking, if anybody's in doubt that Vince McMahon is not a fan of Bray Wyatt, the amount of stuff that Bray Wyatt got away with doing in this segment, you know, Vince is clearly okay with it.
Oh, he just thinks it's great. I mean, he's voicing it all and sending himself up as the Vince Devil doll. And then, you know, Bray says to him, yeah, okay, boss. And then Vince is like, well, that's more like it. And then now, please welcome the new special advisor to the Firefly Funhouse. And then up came, was it Wally? Sorry, not Wally. It was the Wobbly Walrus.
Yep, the wobbly walrus.
So Walrus appears in a suit and says, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Wobbly Walrus. So, yes, it was obviously supposed to be Paul Heyman. And it turned up. So we had this bizarre scene of Bray Wyatt there. And on the left-hand side of the screen, we had Wobbly Walrus. And then on the right-hand side of the screen, we had the Devil Vince doll. And then Bray says, yowie, wowie, and that was that, and to be continued. I mean, it's just absolutely crackers. I mean, there were some people who were thinking that the Firefly Funhouse had peaked and run out of steam, you know, it jumped the shark, you know, you name it. But I mean, you know, this can be it can be constantly reinvented because of its surrealist nature. It means that it's only limited really by the imaginations of, you know, the fertile minds of its proprietors. So, I mean, it is just amazing. You watch the Funhouse and literally anything is possible in there, as long as it has some association or relevance or link with what's going on Raw or preferably SmackDown. So, but there was a lot of references in this to Roman Reigns and the Universal title. So they were keeping that simmering just on one and letting us know that there would be a rematch between Bray and Roman Reigns or The Fiend and Roman Reigns. But yeah, this Wobbly Walrus character was just one of the craziest things I've ever seen. I mean, you just think, you know, it's just, I don't know. I mean, I can't wait to see where they go with this next week.
Sign me up.
It's just going to be mad. It really is.
The other thing on SmackDown that I wanted to get your thoughts on was we got a promo from Bayley where she was kind of sitting down in a chair, looking to camera, explaining herself. So she cuts this promo. So, I mean, what did you think of the promo? I was hoping for a little bit more, but it is the first week. But we also are going to get, it's been advertised that Sasha is returning this Friday to confront Bayley. I'm hoping that that's not the case because I'm hoping that this is going to be led to simmer for a little bit longer, kept on one for a little bit longer, because I mean she did almost murder her with that chair 2 weeks ago, so you would hope that this is going to be a little bit slower.
Yeah, I mean I'm hoping she's going to confront Bayley via Zoom or Skype or video link or whatever, so I'm hoping she's not going to be there in the arena, and that to me would be too soon. I'm with you on the Bayley promo. She didn't seem as confident. There was a few moments there where you almost been reminded of, you know, the Karen from Accounts version of Bayley. I think she turned it around at the end. Bayley said, she was looking right into the camera, to Sasha, you pretended to be my best friend, but all along you were using me. And do you know how I know that? Because I was using you. I never cared about you, and I damn sure didn't care about our friendship. I use you every single step of the way, and thanks to you, I became two belts. Banks. Oops. She actually said that. Thanks to you, I became two belts. Banks. Two belts, Bayley. Bayley Dos Straps, the first ever Grand Slam women's champion. And thanks to you, I'm the longest reigning SmackDown women's champion. But after last week, you are completely useless to me. Didn't really feel like he had like a, you know, a big crescendo. It was like a big finish to this speech. I think they kind of let her down. The script writers let her down here, Kenny. So, I mean,
it's almost like if you're going to do a promo, you either give us a tease of what it is or you don't give us anything, or you give us the full thing. And I felt like we didn't really get any of the three here. So it did feel a little bit like a letdown. I don't think it's a, you know, it's not too late to claw it back.
Oh, no. But,
I mean, you know, Sean Ross Sapp, to give him credit again, he made a suggestion last night on Monday Night Live, which I really think is a great idea of, it would be great if this Friday when we get Sasha coming out, it's actually Bayley dressed as Sasha. And then, you know, Bayley takes it all off and then cuts a really good promo where she, you know, sort of talks about coming out of the shadow of Sasha Banks and all this kind of stuff and how much the fans love Sasha and they've never really loved Bayley. Whatever it is that she comes out with. But give us the story on Friday, because I feel like there's a lot more to it, a lot more stuff in the past you could use to fuel the feud.
Well, I mean, I would kind of disagree with that in terms of they didn't give us anything here, because they did. Because generally when people turn, you know, it's like, why? You know, why so-and-so, why? And often they won't even give any explanation. I mean, at least she said here that she was doing it because she was using Sasha Banks, because she knew that Sasha was using her. And when she went back, did a trip down memory lane, and talked about the way Sasha had been with her in the past. So I think she did explain why she did it. I just didn't feel like the scripting, I didn't feel like the dialogue was that strong. And I felt like the ending of it could have been a lot better. But I mean, as far as, you know, them blowing it, this absolutely, you know, this to me is the start of a long-term story of leading to a match, or rather series of matches between Bayley and Sasha Banks. So, I mean, I don't think it was a flop or anything. I thought it could have been better. But I mean, somewhere's maybe, you know, maybe this needs to simmer as well, Kenny. You know, maybe they're playing the long game here. You know, maybe we need to give them a chance. Maybe this is going to really go up tempo and really sort of, you know, explode when the time is right. So, I mean, hopefully it will do. I mean, at least she explained why she did it. You know, she was using her to get ahead and to advance her own career. I mean, generally, we don't even get an explanation from WWE.
I mean, I feel like that's us giving them low praise, because, you know, what I want is a detailed, exciting explanation that makes sense, not just a basic one, which is what I kind of feel like we got. But, you know, hopefully they're going to expand on what it was, and it will, because this feud has been so good that, you know, you're expecting top shelf material.
Yeah.
Not that sort of top shelf, but you know what I mean. But I thought SmackDown was a really good show, really easy to watch. And really good, but on the other...
Yeah, I would agree. I thought it was really well put together, and it just showed you again, you know, the benefits of the two-hour program, and then, you know, watching Raw, and there's a lot on Raw, but it's just that, you know, we don't need 3 hours of it. I mean, this has been said a million times, but it Raw just from, feels Raw like from such, me. such a struggle at times to get through 3 hours, and you just... If all the best parts of Raw were condensed into 2 hours... I think more people would be into Raw each week than they are now.
Yeah, and I do wonder if Raw was 2 hours, would the decline be so prominent? I don't think it would be. I think people would be... I mean, this show last night was just so poor. There were good parts that, you know, I really liked the Seth Rollins-Dominic Mysterio cage match. I thought that was really great, really good heat to it. You know, Dominic's the fiery babyface, and... You know, Seth Rollins able to get the win in the end with the Mysterio family on the outside, and Murphy, you know, there and he by mistake hit Seth with the door. I thought that was great. I really liked the cage match. I'm trying to say something positive first. What did you make of the cage match?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, and as I said earlier, I was really pleased that there was, seemed to be a reason for the entire Mysterio family to be at ringside, because I was been trying to work out why this is the case. Why are they there each week? And, you know, it's Aaliyah, isn't it? Is it Aaliyah or Aaliyah? I think it's Aaliyah, isn't it?
The problem is you can say Aaliyah or Aaliyah. I think that she's Aaliyah.
Right, okay.
But it's Aaliyah in NXT as well.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, the problem when you have two names that could be pronounced completely differently is that we're always probably going to forget which way it's to be pronounced. But anyway,
I've had that with my first name all the time. Do you pronounce the D? Is the D silent? Oh, you know, it's such a... Is it Martin Finley? Is it Finley Martin? No, it's Finley Martin, not Martin Finley.
The thing is, you can't really ask a Scottish person to say it with the D, because we always just miss letters out. Finley. Well, that's me trying to say it with a D. Or Natalie in Scottish is Natalie.
Ah, right, yeah.
Don't hear the T in that. Anyway. Exactly.
So yeah, but so at least there was a reason for Aaliyah or Aaliyah to be there at ringside. So that's going somewhere, presumably. But yeah, I enjoyed the cage match as well. I think after this week, Dominic Mysterio needs to disappear for a little while.
I think we could see him drafted to SmackDown.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this feud, presumably this feud is now ended in the cage match. I'm not quite sure where that can go from here. Obviously, Dominic cannot beat Seth Rollins. There's no way he should be beating Seth Rollins. I don't know whether there's going to be much of an appetite for another Rollins versus Rey Mysterio match. I mean, maybe Rey will get his revenge in one final match between them. I'm not sure. Probably, I suppose, there will be another match between those two. But Dominic and Rollins, I think that should be it now. I mean, Dominic kicked out of a superplex in a Falcon Arrow, and then Seth won after two curb stomps. So, I mean, prior to this, backstage, Rollins had said to Murphy, "You need to stay back here. You know, I don't want to have to deal with your mistakes at ringside. Do not come to the ring during my match with Dominic Mysterio." And then Murphy, what did he do, Kenny? He couldn't even follow a simple order.
He couldn't. Hits his own Messiah in the face with a door. Poor show. I mean, poor show by Murphy.
What a bungling heel. So after the match, Rollins ends up beating down Murphy. I mean, what a pasting Rollins gave him. So I'm not quite sure where that's going to go. I mean, are Rollins and Murphy through now? Are they going to split? I mean, I know Murphy is the disciple, so, I mean, you know, he's brainwashed. You know, can he leave on his own? Will he have to be banished? Will he have to be thrown out or fired? Or
You don't think that Murphy's prospects are going to be really any better without Seth Rollins?
Well, not really. So I'm not quite sure where he goes after this. But it's hard to believe that. I mean, the thing is, you would think that is it going to lead to a Murphy babyface turn and Murphy versus Rollins feud? But I'm not really that excited about that particular series. But it seems like that is the direction of travel here. Surely Murphy is going to reach a point where he will just snap and he will hit back. And then at that point, Murphy will be a babyface. I mean, it, you know, based on past events in pro wrestling, that does seem like that will be the outcome here, doesn't it?
It does feel that's where it's going.
So, it but I'm not really that enthralled by the prospect of Murphy versus Rollins and Murphy as a babyface for obvious reasons. But I mean, you know, I mean, at least it's something different. But yeah, I enjoyed the match anyway. And presumably that's the end of the feud, at least between Dominic and Rollins.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to the myriad of baffling decisions on this show. So we had Zelina Vega leave Angel Garza and Andrade to now have a career as a wrestler, which makes zero sense. She and then we had Asuka versus Mickie James for the women's title, where it just wasn't that great. And then in the end, we had this weird finish where now Mick Foley did tweet out saying that he's heard that Mickie had injured her shoulder, and that's why they did the sudden finish where, you know, Mickie James avoids the Asuka lock, and she's kind of got she's on top of Asuka, but then the referee rings the bell because her hand had like hit the ground when she was turning.
Yeah.
Really weird finish. And then Zelina Vega walks out and she slaps Asuka. And you know, the idea that now, you know, the way they talk about Mickie James is just really kind of insulting. You know, they talk about how she's always been made fun of her career and she's this and that, which in actuality she's very respected as a wrestler and she's very good. And now we're going to leave that to see Zelina Vega, who is a very basic pro wrestler but a very good manager, leave the thing she's very good at to go to do the thing she's very basic at. Can you talk me through the sense of this?
Well, I mean, I was watching it thinking, hold on a minute, wasn't Zelina Vega the woman who was completely pulverized, trounced by Bianca Belair last month?
Yes, she
and
is.
She was. I mean, it was like no contest, wasn't it, between Bianca and Zelina? Zelina was like running away from her. And like now suddenly was supposed to think that she's ready for Asuka.
Where's Bianca?
Where is Bianca? I mean, if anyone is now challenging Asuka, it should be Bianca Belair. I mean, to me, she would be a better fit as an opponent, and I think that would be a good feud for her because it's been very intermittent with her, hasn't it? She's been there and then she's disappeared for months at a time, and then they bring her back and then they push her and make her, because obviously she's very formidable in the ring. She's, you know, she's somebody who's very believable as an in-ring performer as far as physically. I think there's a lot of holes in her repertoire, Bianca Belair. And there's a lot of things about pro wrestling she doesn't really grasp yet. But as far as like the mechanics of actually doing big moves and being a, you know, powerful force in the ring, she's very believable in that regard. And I think she could have a good B-level series with Asuka. And I think Asuka could do a lot with her and try and sort of teach her the things she's not fully grasping yet about pro wrestling. So that would make far more sense to me for Asuka to face Bianca Belair at Clash of Champions. And instead, it looks like it's going to be Asuka and Zelina Vega. So I can't really make any sense of this at all. Vega ended up slapping Asuka and then bailing from the ring. And we were left with the assumption that that will be the match at the pay-per-view in a couple of weeks. So as far as Asuka versus Mickey James, you know, Mickey did the promo beforehand saying this could be a final shot at the title. I thought James sold really well in this match. At one point, she took a knee to the head. I thought the camera angle on that was perfect, and she sold that really well. I looked at when it's nearly 4 years since they had their match at the TakeOver. It was the NXT TakeOver Toronto on November 19th, 2016, when Asuka and James had their match. And that match was a lot better than this one was. As you say,
I think that was the issue, because we were kind of going into it remembering how good that match was. And you go in with an expectation then.
Yeah, you do. I mean, in many ways, that was almost a minor miracle that James would have a match that good. But I mean, I think that was either a comeback match or she'd only just re-signed at that point. And I think she had a lot to prove. And she was coming back and she was like, right, I'm here. I'm going to show these people that I've still got it and that the bar's obviously been raised for women in this company. And I need to prove to WWE or NXT that I'm good enough to wrestle the best in this division. And I thought she really showed us a lot in that match. And no doubt Asuka would have been a contributing factor as well, because she's really good in the ring, as we all know. But yeah, this match was nowhere near as good as that. As you say, you know, the ending was a bit weird with the referee ruling that James was no longer able to continue. And at first you're thinking, well, is James really upset that the match has been stopped? But I think more likely it was because she was in a lot of pain. So she was upset about that and they just wanted to get him out of the ring, which is obviously what should happen when people are injured. And then right after that, Vega came out and said that, you know, she wasted the best years of her career on Gaza, on Angel Gaza Andrade, and now it was all about her. But I don't really know what else to say about the match. I mean, it was obviously a bit of a disappointment. If we were expecting a match at the level of the TakeOver match from nearly 4 years ago, it obviously wasn't to that level. I didn't think it was that bad. It was obviously disappointing that it had to be called by the ref and the finish was, they couldn't go to the finish that they had planned. But I mean, these things happen in wrestling, and when someone's injured, you need to get them out of there ASAP. So that's all I can really say about it, Kenny. I mean, you know, that's what you do in pro wrestling, isn't it?
It is. Well, listen, elsewhere on the show, we had Braun Strowman turning up in Raw Underground, where apparently anybody can show up, and the multiple segments were designed to get us to him and Baba Tunde, whatever his name is now. What's his name now? I've forgotten. Daba Kato, I think his name's supposed to be Daba Kato. So now it's going to be Daba Kato and Strowman next week on the show. Did Braun Strowman showing up in Raw Underground get you any more excited about Raw Underground?
Yes, it is Daba Kato. I am actually looking at the printout here from What's Going Down Inside the Ropes Wrestling Magazine, which we haven't mentioned on this podcast yet.
We've not. That gets released in 2 days' time. You can still pre-order and get a copy. We are going to the post office daily at the moment to get these issues out, so you can still get your order in. You can also subscribe, monthly recurring payment. You can also get the digital copy on Thursday when it comes out, InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. Thanks for the platform to make a plug, Finn. I appreciate it.
Well, I just had to look it up. I've got my print out here. And yes, it's definitely Dabba Kato. I can confirm that. If it's inside the Ropes magazine, you can take it as gospel.
I believe that, as Roman would say. But what did you think? Did it make you any more interested in Raw Underground having Braun Strowman on?
No. It doesn't annoy me anymore. To me, it's just a little interlude that, you know, you go and get some more water and make a cup of tea or whatever. I mean, obviously, we've got to watch it. But I mean, for anyone else, it's like, you're going to fast forward here. I mean, you're not really going to pay any attention to it. I mean, what was really noticeable was earlier in the show, we had Eric of the Viking Raiders versus Bobby Lashley. And Eric's done some stuff in Raw Underground, hasn't he? And he was basically treated like a bit of a jobber, wasn't he, by Bobby Lashley?
Well, the problem was Ivar's now been... Ivar's going for surgery in his neck, and he's probably going to be out for about a year. So wow. I think Eric's going to be enjoying those lights for a long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole Raw Underground thing to me is kind of irrelevant. But it sucks up so few minutes of the show that it doesn't bother me. There is no really consistency or continuity between what happens there and what happens on main Raw. You know, at first we were trying to make sense out of it all. We're thinking, oh, you know, there must be a big plan here, because what goes on Raw Underground, you know, will be part of this, you know, the fabric of what goes on main Raw. No, it isn't. You know, it's just like, it might as well be booked by another team, because it's totally, you know, detached, not even semi-detached from Raw. It's like, I mean, it's just, to me, it's all a bit pointless, but I refuse to allow it to annoy me, Kenny. I mean, if this Dabba Kato guy ends up becoming a star as a result of this, and if he can have, I mean, maybe, you know what, the only way they can make this matter, right, is they were queuing up, weren't they, Braun and Dabba Kato for a fight when it ended, when Shane, that's it for Raw Underground this week, you'll have to tune in next week. Now, instead of seeing Dabba Kato and Braun clash on Raw Underground, because it'll be very brief, it'll be over before you know it, it won't have any lasting impact on anything that happens on main Raw, why not have them wrestle or face off on normal Raw? Because that there could lead to a series of rematches, and it could have story back in and become something that is going to take them both somewhere. I mean, obviously Braun needs to be rebuilt after his two consecutive pay-per-view losses at SummerSlam and Payback. You know, the Dabba Kato guy, I mean, we don't really know what he can do yet in a regular wrestling ring, but I mean, it's Braun's job now, as somebody who's been doing this for a while, who's been champion. It's his job now to start helping these newcomers along. That's his job. You know, the onus is on him to make stars. So, I mean, instead of them having like a, you know, a 60-second scuffle on Raw Underground, put them on main Raw, give them something to work with, and let's just see if this can matter in the long run. Because we know on Raw Underground, it won't mean anything at all in the long run, because it never does.
It never does. Well, listen, the big thing on Raw was the story of Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre. We opened the show, found out they're going to be facing off in the main event. Adam Pearce is the official. Who came out and kind of told us what was going on. Drew proposed an ambulance match for him and Randy Orton at Clash of Champions. Then Drew has to show this, like, you know, really cringy graphic of like wrestlers in hospital gowns who've been victims of the Claymore kick. Oh, so grim. But anyway, it leads us to Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre. At the beginning, they have a handshake thing, but it's all kind of friendly. And as the show goes on, that friendliness dissipates and then
turns sour.
It goes sour. They're brawling backstage. And that leads us to the main event where they're fighting and Retribution comes out to make it a no contest. And instead of there being five members of Retribution, how many did you count, Finn?
I reckon there was a dozen there. I think there was a dozen, but we went to the shaky camera work, you know, all the special effects were brought in, weren't they, to make it seem like chaotic. But I think there was a dozen.
Dozen.
And then they were all wiped out, weren't they?
And then the Hurt Business came out. Now, my question was going to be to you, because we see Drew and Keith doing dives onto the pile. We're going off there in chaos. So they added in 7 more people to Retribution, faceless people. I mean, they're all faceless, but, you know, faceless as in these people have not been leaked that they're actually part of the group. There's often an argument of quality and quantity. Did the increase in quantity improve the quality of Retribution?
Well, obviously not, because we had the Hurt Business and then Drew and Keith Lee taking them all out that with relative ease, really. So, I mean, if you look at the end of Raw, you know, you might as well just cancel this storyline right now, because Retribution were no match for the Hurt Business or Drew McIntyre and Keith Lee, who 12 people, it'd been a 12-on-2. They'd beaten down Drew McIntyre and Keith Lee, but then they'd risen from the dead and helped the Hurt Business wipe out all 12 members of Retribution. So, you know, it was definitely a case of quantity over quality. Now, earlier in the show, Retribution had appeared. The lights had gone out after a Ricochet versus Cedric Alexander match. Cedric won that. Then the lights went out. We saw the Retribution logo all over the Thunderdome. And then we had a close-up of, I think it was five Retribution members there. It was 5 or 6.
Which is going to be Dominik Dijakovic.
He was the one who was speaking. He had the distorted voice. He was the one who was speaking. Right next to him was Maya Yim.
And then we've also got Mercedes Martinez, Dio Madden, and Shane Thorne. That's the rumored five. I mean, the Dio Madden one actually makes the most sense, because he was kind of just shunned from commentary. Yes. And tossed aside. But yeah, I think the five that they had, there's a good story there with most of them. And just bringing in these other job people, just it actually took me out of what I would have probably been quite, if it had just been the five fighting off, you know, fighting against a few people, I would have probably been more into it. But I felt like it was just, you know, instead of getting a really nice ice cream sundae brought to my table, I got an ice cream sundae with a sparkler and an umbrella and a light show and a clown, and I just want the sundae.
Yeah. I mean, the thing to me, these guys are saying, oh, you know, we've been treated like dirt, you know, we're not putting up with it anymore, blah, blah, blah. So in many ways, what they should really be targeting WWE officials, i.e. Adam Pearce. I mean, why is Adam Pearce suddenly now all over the show? I mean, he's not very charismatic. He's not very interesting. I mean, I just don't understand why he's been given this prominent role on TV. Maybe so Retribution can beat him down. But to me, Retribution should be targeting, you know, the WWE officials. And I think if you want to try and make this into a storyline, a real storyline or realistic storyline that people can really relate to, then why not do that instead of having them target the wrestlers? I mean, it's not Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre's fault, is it, that these guys feel like they've been underused or undervalued and not given opportunities? Why is it Drew and Keith Lee's fault? It's not, is it?
None of it makes sense. You know, the people they attack don't make sense. Because if you looked at Mia Yim is with Keith Lee.
Yes.
So why would she be attacking...
And everyone knows this. I mean, this was a big part of the NXT storyline, wasn't it, for weeks?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Dominik Dijakovic, he's a decent performer, but he was never NXT champion. He was never going to be. As I said last week, I felt like his talent took him as far as he was going to go in NXT. He was not a true top guy in NXT. I've always felt that Mia Yim's like terminally mediocre. I just don't think she was never going to be a top star in the women's division in NXT. I mean, you know, she's a decent in-ring performer, but, you know, she's now on Raw. She's not, to me, somebody who's like a top star. So I don't have a great deal of faith in this crew of talent being able to really get over as stars when they reveal their true identities, which presumably they're going to do at some point. And besides, as we said, the storyline makes no sense. They all, I think, went as far, apart from Dio Madden, who, as you say, was thrown off Raw commentary. I mean, I understand why he might be upset, but again, that's more, you know, the rage should be directed at management for removing him from the announce position, not other wrestlers. So, I mean, that would actually make perfect sense if he were to, you know, target Vince McMahon's limousine or something like that, or WWE officials and beat them up or terrorize them. I could understand that, but not other wrestlers. That makes no sense at all. So I think this angle, you know, this faction is in deep trouble already, Kenny, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do not
fancy its chances at all, short term or long term.
This Raw was a big fail as a show overall. It just didn't give you a lot to come out of it feeling excited about. Didn't give you a lot coming out. It felt like too much stuff. You know, we don't even have enough time to go through everything that happened because it was such a long show. But I've been enjoying Raw the last few weeks, but this one was a letdown for me. So we'll see if they can pick it back up again next week. But yeah, well, listen, that's it for us here in the main podcast. We will be back on Patreon for more. Finn, do you have any plugs for us?
Yeah, Just That Magazine, Kenny. I'm going to let you... Well, we've already plugged it, haven't we?
Well, we'll plug it again. InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. You can get issue one. You can do a monthly recurring subscription, which you can cancel any time. You can do an annual subscription if you just want to pay for a year up front and get it out of the way and, you know, just get not have to keep that cash for it. And the international postage, we've slashed up to 50% of that. So you can go and check all that at InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. We are going to the post office pretty much every day to continue to ship orders. So get involved. And if you're not that bothered about the physical copy, you can go digital. We cater to everybody. And on Thursday, this Thursday, the 17th of September, you can pick it up at InsideTheRopesMagazine.com. The PDF will go straight into your device and you can read it straight away. You can also go to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for bonus content. A clip of Shawn Michaels from our live shows talking about the day after Montreal when he went to TV to talk to the Undertakers up there. Over 240,000 people have watched it already in the last 2 days. So go check that one out.
I mean, the double cross, it's still got drawing power nearly 23 years on, hasn't it?
I was quite proud of myself that I managed to ask a fresh question about the screw job. That's a hard thing to do at this point, to find something that's not been covered a million times.
Very well done there, Kenny. Yeah,
and you could, as always, the best way that you can support us is on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. It's the thing that makes us be able to have Finn take a lot of time out in his early retirement to do the podcast.
Yes, absolutely. And I've said it before, we do not take these things for granted. Absolutely, we don't.
So patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. And we're going to be putting out a call on our Facebook community and on Twitter for a Q&A. And the good news is you'll be able to see that Q&A on Patreon, but also that Q&A will be in Inside the Ropes magazine. So you can ask a question that can be in print forever. It will be in the British Library, documented forever.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So yeah, those questions will be answered in issue 2 of Inside the Ropes magazine.
Yeah, so
some of them anyway.
Exactly, and you'll be able to get that on Patreon first, a few weeks before. So yeah, check out our Facebook community and Twitter if you have a burning question. We always do get pretty good questions, so let's keep the momentum going.
We want quality and quality. Quantity is great, but quality as well. So, absolutely. So yeah, if you've got any questions, please send them in. And you know, there is a address in Inside the Ropes magazine for your Q&A questions. So and once you receive the magazine, then please feel free to send questions in at any time, and the best ones will be answered in the magazine.
So listen, thank you very much for all your support, everybody, and we will talk to you soon. If I said tonight